Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sem Premier Land podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up, guys? Not glad to be back. This one's going to suck, but we're here, so thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you for tuning in. It's going to be a bit of an episode of two halves, we think. We've got a couple of games to recap and a couple of games to preview. We're back to that four games per episode busyness that we had in the first part of the season. And yeah, mixed emotions for this one. But before we dive in to this week's episode, thank you, as always, to our founding members on Substack: Des Windsor, McGlynn, Ali Tareen, Tito, Matt, Moritz, Paulman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, MJ, Mats, Luke Villano, Raul Escobar, and Rajat. Rajat, the latest member on there. So the list is growing. Really appreciate the support from you guys. As always, check out our Substack via the link in the description. If you haven't already, and you can try a week for free. In the last week, we've had bonus content such as Isaac's bonus article, Screams to No Avail, Bargain Signings, and Conte's Obvious Play, which takes a look at various aspects of Antonio Conte's interview about his next job, amongst some reflections on the last summer window. We had a bonus podcast, of course, in the last week where we went back and rated the summer signings, given that we're just a bit beyond the midway point of the season. There was the newsletter, so all the latest news roundup, which had a bit of a European flavour to it, obviously before our playoff clash with Stade Rennais. And the bonus article was Behind Sempre Milan, the first years of the business revisited. Prior to that episode, prior to that installment of it, we sort of recap the founding of the website and the brand and how all that came about. This is the second installment in it, and it takes a look at how we moved from formation to actually, you know, trying to resemble a professional organization at that point. So hopefully you guys enjoy that. It's a little bit of a peek behind the curtain in terms of how we came to be what we are. Not that we're this big media enterprise now, but just people have often asked, like, how did we all come together? You know, people from Sweden, the UK, America, and a lot of different places. And the next installment of that is actually going to be about the investment that we received from the network that we're now part of, and that's when it really took a leap forward. That was quite literally life-changing for me and some of the other guys, so stay tuned for that one. Without further ado, let's dive in. Bit of Europa League action to begin with. So we decided for this one that we are going to just do the review and the preview back to back. That's an interesting little label down there at the bottom. Let's keep that as is, I think.
Thanks to the Watch-Along.
Let's mention that. So we were going to do it for the Rennes game, the Watch-Along, but what it was going to be was a pre-match show that Lorenzo and Stefano were going to do. However, as we got nearer to the time, we realized that we didn't want to launch something that wasn't quite a complete product. So essentially, we decided to delay it for the Monza game. As I'm sure some of you are aware, that's the first one that we did. And we did a full watch-along for the entire 90 minutes, well, 90-plus minutes. And it was an interesting game to do it for. But on a serious note, thank you to everybody who tuned into that. We're really happy with the viewership that it got. And even happier with the engagement. The amount of comments that were coming in and everything was brilliant. We hope that you enjoyed the guys talking through it and their raw reactions to what was going on. As said, plenty to talk about, which we're going to obviously go over. But yeah, that's why a few of the labels might be a bit off here, is because they were fiddling around and whatnot. And yeah, let's go for it. So coming into this one, I think a lot was written about the form that we were in, obviously, because I think we were on 8 in a row without defeat. Mm-hmm. And a lot was written about the form that Rennes were in. They'd won every single game in 2024 and the last one of 2023. So they won 8 in a row coming into this one. They were scoring goals. They'd surged up the table. They were the first team to put their place in the cup quarterfinals in France after beating someone 6-0 or 6-1, I think it was. And ultimately, we swept them aside pretty convincingly. I had no complaints about the starting lineup for this one. That is not something that might continue through this episode. However, I thought it was right to put out a strong team, purely because the pressure was on us to get the job done in the first leg at home. And I think that's ultimately what happened, you know. The undercurrent to all of this, before I throw it to you, for me, is that above all, I was really disappointed with Ren. I think they're probably the worst defensive team that we've faced at San Siro all season. Like, seriously, you know. It could have been more in the end. But we did. We got the job done professionally.
Yeah, I mean, this game, it felt like a training routine, or, you know, that the final preseason match where you play like that Serie D team and you just put 12 past them. I mean, it looked like that, obviously not as prolific, but still, I mean, three goals, Loftus-Cheek with another brace. I think that was, at that point, his like third in three games or something ridiculous like that. Like, guy's on fire goal scoring wise, rest of the game wise, you know, he's lacking behind a little bit. Liao finally got the goal that he's been looking for. Obviously still hasn't broken the drought from the regular season in the league, but he scored in this one, and it was a beautiful goal. You saw a lot of emotion come out of him for that. I thought he hurt himself.
Me too.
Celebrating it, because he like punched the ground. Everyone said he was just really happy. So I get that. But yeah, I mean, like I said, this was a training routine. It was simple. Runs did nothing. I don't know if they were just completely outmatched, or if they were unprepared or what, but I mean, I'm looking at it here. They had zero big chances. I mean, they didn't do anything. Like, they had 12 shots, but the vast majority were off target, seven of them, and one of them was blocked. So, I mean, yeah, they didn't really do anything. Their XG was 0.77, and that's really it. That there just isn't any one moment from their game that you could pinpoint as like a good opportunity from them. You know, every time they did have an attack, it was shut down immediately. And it seemed like just about every time we had an attack, we scored. It really could have been many more goals than three, you know. We put them to the sword, and that's a great way to start a first leg, especially at home in the Europa League, when we haven't been in this competition in years. It's a good emphatic statement win.
Yeah, it was a lot more routine than I was expecting it to be. I think I picked a 2-1 or a 3-1 in the pre-match. Now, obviously, without the away goals rule, that changed the dynamic a little bit. I suppose, you know, they didn't have to push as much. I thought it was interesting. Their head coach, Julian Stefan, who has done a great job since taking over, to be honest. They were in turmoil when he came in. He was pretty honest after the game, and he sort of acknowledged that it was a risk to go 4-4-2 against us and to invite so many individual battles. But he just kind of hoped that the forwards would get into the game a little bit more and cause problems. They had a couple of half moments, like, you know, they had a shot from Bourigaud on the edge of the box that curled just wide. Maignan kind of looked beaten on that one. That Désiré Doué, perhaps, on the left wing, 18-year-old kid, he looked really, really good. Liao liked to tweet about him after the game as well. He looked pretty dynamic. But aside from that, I think the big thing for us, at least in the defensive end, was keeping Martin Terrier and Ana Kalimuendo quiet. Those are the two threats. Kalimuendo got pocketed by Gabia. So
is that left wing Doué? Is his brother the right back also?
Yes.
Doué?
Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of cool. I think it's
his
brother's on a team.
Yeah. I think ping a crossfield ball from right back to left wing every now and again to try find him, but I don't recall that happening. Bourigaud, I think, is their second top scorer. That Baptiste Santa Maria, who's playing in midfield, is pretty good. We've been linked with him before, I think just before last summer. And we know players like Arthur Tiata, who was at Bologna, Steve Mandanda, who's obviously 40-odd now. Giroud actually scored his first ever professional goal past Mandanda, and that was in 2007. How wild is that? But yeah, so we did our job on the defensive end, which is all we could really ask for, because we knew we'd probably have enough to find goals at the other end. And as you mentioned, they came. Just after the half-hour mark, it was a perfect cross from the right by Florenzi, pinpoint. Loftus-Cheek stood sort of just behind and in front of the penalty spot, so he's probably about 14 yards out, something like that. And he meets it with a perfect glance, you know. It's one of those where if he gets up and rockets it, I actually think he probably gets too much contact on it and, you know, straight into the keeper's hands or wider than near post, whatever. He gave it just the right amount of contact and it nestled nicely inside the far post. as I said to you last week, the guy's a striker. And then the second goal was a bit more of an instinctive finish, shall we say. Corner comes in. It's headed by Kier, saved by Mandanda, falls straight to Loftus-Cheek, diving header, puts it into the back of the net. And that was on 47 minutes. So that was, you know, a big blow to strike just after half time. And then 6 minutes after that, Rafa Leão gets... That was a gorgeous goal. You know, we deserved... Like, RLC will take the headlines, but I think the best goal was Leão's, without a doubt.
Yeah, look, I mean, every goal Loftus-Cheek has scored is the exact same goal. You know,
it feels like
what you described is exactly how I felt the last five goals were prior to that one. Yeah. And the one after is the only one with slight variance. And it's still the same goal. It's, you know, it's basically the same thing, just using headed instead, you know. So, yeah. Which is good. You know, consistency, he knows what he's good at. The team should know what he's good at. And if they're in that position, they could always put it up and know that Loftus-Cheek will be there. So you know, more of that, please, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And there's something quite interesting. Ren made all five of their subs in a six-minute period. They made a double sub and then a triple sub. So I think that was their gaffer saying, this hasn't worked.
Yeah.
You know, and I have absolutely no complaints about the changes we made. Look, I think we missed a couple of chances late on. There was a lovely bit of interplay with Pulisic and Leão and Giroud, I think. Mm-hmm. Sort of pinging around the box, one twos, and then Pulisic gets it back left side of the box, hits it low, Mandanda saves well. And then Musa goes on a big surging run and sort of gets through and hits that. That deserved to be a goal, 100%. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, wasn't. We could be looking at a wider margin of victory, but I think Pioli did the right thing. He brought on Okafor for Leão, 62 minutes. Leão actually asked for the change, feeling a bit of discomfort, but turned out to be half fit, which we'll come on to. Chow coming on for the last half an hour, I think, was the right thing to do as well. What a brilliant situation to come on to and get some minutes in your legs again. We'll come on to that. But then Benacer coming on for the last 15. Terracciano coming on again. Look, there's players that are struggling for playing time at the moment, especially starts. And these are the situations we've been crying out to see more of the guys. Yeah. You know, it might have even been right to get Simic on there and just minutes in ideal situations rather than putting them into jeopardous situations. And then, yeah, Adli was the last guy to come on just to restock the midfield for Pulisic last 10 minutes. But yeah, as I say, I think my biggest emotion was I was kind of disappointed with Ren after all the hype attached to them. And I thought we did a good job on them. You kind of mentioned the stats, but yeah, well clear on XG. We had 60% of the ball, 19 shots to 12, 8 shots on target to 4. I've got 4 big chances to 1. Obviously, you had 0 big chances for them. We had 8 corners to their 2. We didn't have a yellow card or red card. Red card is also going to become a topic of this episode, but I think it just goes to show that we kind of won it in first or second gear. We didn't really need to do too much.
Yeah, I mean, this game reminded me a lot of the first game of the Champions League group stage against Newcastle, where we just fucking dominated. Obviously, we didn't score a goal in that game, but you know, it was a team with a lot of hype behind them coming into it, and they looked like old sick dogs and just couldn't do anything to us, and we just had our way. So, yeah, I think we should have had more goals than this. I think this is a great time to give Pioli his flowers because he's certainly not getting any going forward in the episode. I mean, there's not much else to say about this one, right? It was very routine, very straightforward. And now I think we're going to see some rotation for the next one. Yeah, anything else? Should we jump to top some flops?
Nah, it's just a classic. Like, I don't know if this is just an English football fan thing, but it's sort of like when you hear a little bit about a team coming into a game and you're thinking, we've got to be on it to beat these, you know, they're coming here a bit of good form. You don't really know too much about them. And then after like 50 minutes, I'm just going, these are shite. These are shite. Like, they're just not at the level. As I say,
yeah,
probably the worst defensive performance we've seen all season at San Siro. And Torino were included in that, who we beat 4-1 in like the first or second home game of the season.
When we actually dominate a team, our first thought is not, look how great we are. It's look how shitty these guys are.
These are shite. Yeah, like, let's top and flop it. Yeah. That not a euphemism. top for me, RLC. I think he was very good.
Yeah, I mean, how do you go against the guy who's quarter brace, right?
Yeah, I thought Liao was good as well. I think he's a fair shout. Took his goal fantastically. I just think it was a performance where I'd say almost nobody dropped below a six. I think Giroud was a tad ineffective, and him getting all 90 minutes was a bit of a head scratcher for me. But having looked back at how the subs took place, I think Liao asking to come off kind of fucked the plans that Pioli had in terms of the changes he was going to make in attack. I think he wanted to bring Jovic on, and then perhaps Okafor for Pulisic or something like that, but it just probably reshuffled the deck, and he sort of said, I'm going to have to give you 90, Giroud, but you'll get a rest on Sunday, which he didn't. Flop of the game is a tough one. Very tough, in fact. Did anybody do anything wrong? Giroud, I guess, then, you know, because fill your boots in a game like this. We're creating plenty. I know he was involved in some nice interplay, but he is a number nine that has been in good goal-scoring form. He actually has played against Ren before. Not that makes a difference, but I'd maybe say him just because he was the quietest of a good bunch.
Yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense to pick the striker who didn't get a goal when you win 3-0, and, you know, he could have had a lot more, so I get that. I'm going to go Okafor. He came on, he played a half hour, but I cannot remember a single moment of him during the game other than coming on for an injured Liao, so it might be a little harsh even, I don't know. I mean, for a game like this, it's really tough to pick one. But don't worry, we got a game coming up where we're spoiled for choice, so we'll get there soon. But yeah,
I'm picking one for that as well. The team, like Maddie, where he just picks purely
cop out answer, but it's always
100%. Yeah, So we'll move on to the preview then for Thursday night's game. Obviously, 3-0 lead in the bank makes it seem like we've got a foot and a half in the next round, shall we say, where some more difficult opponents will await. We're saying this with obviously the hindsight of having lost the game on Sunday 4-2. I'm apprehensive about this, right? And I know I've just slagged them off, and I know I've just said they were crap at the back. I think they were. But I was reading something from Sky, Pepe Di Stefano, last night, where he says that he's actually going to rotate again for this game and then focus on the Atalanta clash that's to come on Sunday, which obviously becomes semi-important again, given that the team below has gained ground. And if that's the case, then I'm worried. I think defensively we are all over the place at the moment. Yes, we kept Ren at bay, but I don't see them being that bad again. I think they've also been pretty damn good at home. They won 3-1 at the weekend, so they bounced back there. And if we concede first, especially in the first half, I think we're in deep shit here. But I think we're also going to score. So I think that makes things pretty difficult for Ren from that point.
Yeah, I mean, my gut says that we're going to walk them again. However, and this isn't my own research, but it count on Twitter, Frank Crivello posted a screenshot of a game where we fielded Shevchenko, Kaká, Gattuso, Pirlo, Seedorf, Cafu, Nesta, Maldini, and Dida. So a bunch of stars, some of the best ever to play in a Champions League second leg after going up 3-0 in the first leg and losing 4-0 to Deportivo. Not exactly the best team in the world.
They had a good side actually around then. I think they got to the semis against Porto. That was when that was the year Porto won it. Could be wrong there, but still should
beat. Yeah, but the point being, you know, that's why you don't change everyone in that game. You know, a lot of people, myself included, were thinking like, why rotate for the Monza game when we should rotate for the second Saturday game? And I still agree with that. But that's why, you know, anything could happen. That's why you play the game. If there was a mercy rule in football, you wouldn't have the second leg. But we do have one, so we still got to be on top of it. I think they're going to come out obviously hungry, right? They need a win. They have to score 4 goals. That's the only way they're going through. So they're going to be looking to really attack. They're going to look to probably put a lot of pressure on whomever is the center back, be it Kjær or Chow, whichever one starts. They're going to look to target that weakness. They know Calabria is probably still out, so Forenzi is another guy to target. Hopefully Teo's got his head screwed back on. I know it wasn't exactly there against Monza, so and hopefully Maignan shows up and we could actually hold them off, but they're going to attack. They're going to. I would be shocked if we keep a clean sheet here. You know, I think we're still going to win, and I think we'll still push forward and probably score a goal or two, but it's not going to be the absolute cakewalk it was before, unless we catch them early, early on a counter. They push hard and fast, and we just run past and put one away, make it 4-0 on aggregate. Then it might be a little game over for them. You know, that would demoralize them, but if they could score early, it'll be a long night.
Yeah, it's mad because it's 3-0 on aggregate, yet we're here saying the first goal's massive. I think if we concede it, like, I think doubts will start to creep in again. But if we score it, then that's it. It's killed off for good. Sort of team are we fielding for this one then? Obviously, the reports are that we'll rest a few players again and perhaps field a bit of a half and half team. But what would your team be?
I guess it starts with Liao, right? I don't know what his fitness level is like. He wasn't supposed to play at all and then had to be pulled on relatively early at halftime. So he might need a bit of a rest again, or maybe he starts and comes off at halftime. I'm not sure what it's going to be. I definitely would start Giroud and Pulisic. So I would actually start the whole starting front three. Liao, Giroud, Pulisic. Have Okafor come on at halftime. Chukwueze looks like he's not at the races. I know he's just played an entire tournament, made it to the final, but God, that was a horrible performance by him against Monza. And it's consistent from him now. So I know Pulisic needs a rest. He's getting too much game time. He asked for a rest. That's why he was benched against Monza. And again, he didn't get to get the full 90 off. So he might come off again as well. But I think we have to do the exact opposite game plan here, which is field the strong team, get ahead early and quick, and then make the changes.
Yeah, we're in a really tough position here in terms of selection because you say play Giroud from the start. Jovic is banned for 3 league games. So Giroud's going to have to haul ass in the next 3 league games. So I actually think, bizarrely, even though it'll seem like rewarding him for the incident that we're going to talk about, I think you have to start Jovic. I also think you start Chukwueze just because he's been better in Europe. And Pulisic really needs a rest. Like, he should have had a proper rest on Sunday against Monza, but instead had to come on and was almost the hero and rescued something. And then it's like, okay, you're really going to play Okafor on the left, and we're going into it that same attacking trio that just did nothing against Monza. It's difficult. And again, another player who really could do with a break is Loftus-Cheek because he started so many games in that 10 position. So I'm tempted to say you change system for this, actually. Take Loftus-Cheek out and you play Moussa, Reinders and Bennacer, or a combination of the three midfielders that we have available. Maybe you put Adli in there or something like that, and you just sacrifice playing with the 10 and you try play a bit more direct. Alternatively, maybe you could make a case for playing Adli in the 10 or something like that, but I don't think you need to. We've got a 3-0 lead to defend. Let's just stop the midfield. And then I think a lot depends on how Calabria is. We're unsure on his condition at this point, but potentially Terracciano gets a start at right back. I think that's a tough ask against that duo. He looks like the kind of player who'd have the better of him. So you probably have to go with Florenzi again. I think Kier's going to come back in. I've just got that feeling that he's not going to send Chow out there again after what happened. And Gabia basically has to start, and Teo probably has to start as well. We are going into this a little bit blind because the starters from some, like the training only really gets into gear today, so we'll know a little bit more from then. But yeah, it's hard now. It is hard. I know we'll come on to the team that was picked against Monza, but I think winning that first leg so comfortably kind of messed up the plans a little bit, because I think Pioli probably thought we'd have a job to do. We still have a job to do, but thought we'd have to play a very strong team on Thursday night to make sure we get through. And he'd already pre-planned to rotate against Monza. So now it's like, are we going to double down and rotate again because Atalanta's become a bigger game? I don't know. It's tough. Best laid plans have probably come unstuck. What's your prediction?
I think we're still going to win. 2-1. maybe 2-2. Like I say, it's a tough one. I think it comes down to who gets the first goal. If it's us, we're going to run away with it. If it's them, it might be a bit of a nail biter. But ultimately, we're going through on aggregate regardless. So I know they're not going to score four unanswered goals on us. I don't think they'll even get three. They might get one. They might get two. But I don't think they shut us out either. You know, I think however many goals they get, we'll at least get one. So it doesn't matter. I think we go through.
Yeah, I think we go through. I think we lose on the night. I just got this feeling that we're going to be a little bit rattled potentially by a fast start from them. But I think we go through on aggregate. So I'll say 2-1 to Ren, which would obviously still be pretty comfy. And now we move on.
To the fun stuff, huh?
Yeah, there we go. Fun stuff. Yeah, fun. I normally try and go through games chronologically. I don't think there's any point with this because it was a shit show, basically, from near enough the start to finish. But before we go into the game itself, we need to talk about the starting lineup. What was your reaction when you saw the team that we'd fielded with six changes, basically an entirely new front three, again, two changes in midfield, and Chiao coming in for his first start in 82 days?
Yeah, I was a little fired up. I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I knew Chiao was going to have the worst game of his career, so I was excited to see him back. I thought the changing the attacking trident was foolish to change all three players. We saw it a bunch last season when we were making our deep run in the Champions League. He rotated as much people as he could in the league, and we dropped points in every single game that he did that. Every single game, we put on the stars at halftime to try to get a comeback, and we only pulled it off like once to a draw. You know, it hasn't worked for Pioli in his system. So to think it would this time is crazy. I mean, at that point, before the game started, obviously, we have beaten Monza in every single meeting between the clubs in history. No draws, no losses. We've won every single one. And
we actually lost to them in the Coppa Italia in like the 60s or something, but that doesn't really count. Modern era.
Yeah, modern era. We'll go with that. My app didn't have that on there. So
yeah, it doesn't go about that far.
Then in the league is what I meant to say. But that's changed now. The thing with rotating all three people up top is there's no chemistry. There's no cohesion. You know, Jovic has come on, yes, and he's played enough. But every time he comes on and does well, we're now in a 4-4-2. You know, where we've rotated and he's playing alongside Giroud. Okafor has come on and he always looks fine. You know, he's not an issue. That doesn't bother me. Chukwueze doesn't look good and hasn't for a while. Also, he just spent a month and a half in Africa at AFCON with Nigeria, so he hasn't been around his teammates. So totally playing different. I mean, Bennacer came back while he was gone, right? So they have zero chemistry. There was just a lot of people that weren't meant to play together that haven't linked up in a while. You know, if you rotate half of the players, then you could get away with that. Now, after the game, it came out that Pulisic specifically asked to be rested because he was tired, and rightly so. He played about 20 odd games in a row. Liao said, I don't want to risk it. I still feel a slight tingle in my calf from midweek. So that's why he was taken off. So that made sense. In hindsight, the rotation is justified by Pioli. In the moment, it seemed ridiculous, and I hated it, but I still thought we would win. So,
yeah. So people have really, really kicked off about the changes that were made. There were six of them, which on the face of things is, you know, it's extreme. It's pretty extreme rotation. It's not quite the level that we saw against, I think it was Bologna between Champions League legs last season, where we made like 8 or 9 changes, but it's still pretty extreme, especially when you're changing an entire department. But my rebuttal to this, and I'm not saying Pioli's blameless, but what do people really want? You know, what do people want to happen? Giroud played 90 minutes against Rennes, which I think you can make a strong case was poor management by Pioli. You've got to try bringing him off a bit earlier, and then he's got more in the tank for this game. But it happened. So when naming his starting lineup, nobody argued about Jovic starting at the time. Nobody argued.
Everyone had been asking for it.
Yeah, exactly. Loftus-Cheek, you have to keep in there because he's on such a hot run of form. I potentially think that he could do with a rest very soon, as kind of mentioned. Pulisic, as you mentioned, wanted a rest, so Chukwueze has to come in. He's just come back from AFCON, where he didn't actually play that much, so he should be fresh. He's literally our only other option on the right-hand side, really. The reports leading up to the game said Okafor would be starting on the right-hand side, which I would have found weirder, because he's never played there for us. And Liao was going to start on the left. That perhaps would have filled people with a little bit more optimism, because Liao has been very good. He's our main creative force and all that. But Liao said that he felt something in his calf, so he didn't want to risk him from the start. I think that's fair as well. So we literally fielded the team that we kind of had to from that point onwards. There was no alternative. People can say, well, maybe you divert Pulisic to the left and you only play him for 45 minutes, and then you play Okafor on the right, and then you play... Oh, no, you play Okafor down the middle, and then you play Chukwueze on the right, something like that. But it would have still filled people with a little bit of, like, what the fuck's going on here? I think he made the changes that he had to do in attack, and it didn't work purely because of what you're saying. They don't have much chemistry, cohesion. Monza defended quite deep as well to soak up pressure. They found it tough to break him down. I think the problem, and the channel that people need to divert their anger down, is the fact that these players haven't had more opportunities from the start in other games. We fielded that Pulisic, Giroud, Liao trident for so many games. You know, I don't know the exact number, but I think it was like 12 out of 13 league games coming up to this. And that's the problem. You know, there wasn't the change here and there. So you're keeping two out of your three stars, but you're giving a guy game time. Chukwueze has been away at AFCON. What can we do about that? Jovic has been fantastic off the bench. I think he deserved a start in the league here and there. And, you know, Liao as well could have probably done with a bit of rest, but he was dragging us through performances at that point. So I think people's anger needs to be at the mismanagement of resources throughout the season rather than what led up to this game, because the starting lineup that we named, there were even people excited to see how that front three did. You know, it looked quick, it looked dynamic, it looked like we'd be interchangeable and we'd see something exciting. It didn't happen that way, but it's always hindsight being 20/20. And I just think, Pioli's throwing the game. He's just named the team that he felt that he needed to name, you know? I don't feel the same vitriol towards what happened. I think, if anything, be angry at changing both midfielders again, because the two midfielders that we had against Rennes were coming into the game with confidence, probably. I thought Musa had been really good. Reinders, we know that he's our metronome, like from that side of things. So I think changing the double pivot didn't really help in terms of continuity. And again, ciao. But he clearly wasn't ready. Well, when the fuck are we going to start him then? When are we going to give him that first start, if not against in that particular game? He played 30 minutes off the bench against Rennes, came on into a nice comfy situation, yes. What are you going to do, start him against Atalanta on Sunday? Well, and that going to be his first start?
Don't forget Kier getting spun around last game too, you know? People were saying, I can't wait for Chao to start next week. Like, everyone wanted it. I did too. We all did. Let's not pretend like Chao is a horrible player that we knew that he was going to drop this performance. We all wanted him back. He's our starting center back for a reason. Look, he just wasn't ready, and we thought he was.
What have we been saying for weeks, though, about the center backs? When they come back, be ready for them to be rusty, because they've spent 3 months out. And then people have not just said, oh, he wasn't ready. But it's like, oh, Pioli should never have put him out there for the game like this. What are you fucking on about? Yes. Like, come Monza. On. Like, how does he get match rhythm back? By playing games. Unfortunately, he made mistakes even when he was fully fit. But now, coming back after 82 days out, are you expecting him to be back to, you know, Baresi levels? Because it doesn't happen that way, unfortunately.
And this was the strongest back line you could have put him in with at the moment. So, I mean, what do you want? Like, everyone's saying, oh, Gabi is a pillar. And he is, you know, he's been fantastic. Teo tends to be fantastic. Florenzi's been pretty solid. Mignon, we all know what he's capable of. So if there's ever a time to put a guy who isn't ready in, it's in that back line against a team who was sitting in the bottom half of the table. You know, hindsight's 20/20, like you said. Mm-hmm. you can't get mad at the Chow start. Everyone wanted it, myself included. I was begging for Kier to be benched. Now I kind of want him back, but that's for next week, you know?
Yeah, it's for what it's worth, I know I said I think Kier will start against Ren, but I think you almost have to start him after that. It's tough now with Chow because, you know, he is our starting centre-back, or at least he will undoubtedly be that once we feel like he's back to close to 100%. I wasn't worried about the physical side of what I saw with Chow at all, really. You know, I thought he kept up with the pace of the game quite well. We're going to start talking about game incidents here. So, but for the first goal, it wasn't that... It was mental, basically, is what I'm trying to say. I think it was more psychological fog and being sort of half a second to a fucking 5 seconds behind the game mentally, rather than him looking just very leggy and tired and not up to condition. It was just that the gears hadn't quite, you know, flipped in his brain yet and got worrying. But first goal, it is kind of unforgivable. He got a second chance.
Let's not even start with that, because there was an incident prior to that with Di Gregorio going out to collect a cross and headbutting his own teammate and then collapsing for a good 10 minutes as a concussion. I don't know if you saw the picture of him the morning after, but half of his head is just dark purple and swollen. It looks a lot worse than it did. Yeah.
Did you see the physio talking to him and he's like, he's not even in the room.
He couldn't sit up.
No, and it's dangerous, and I'm so glad concussion protocol has come in, because in years gone by, the player's word would have been enough. And I honestly thought he'd have to drag Carboni off as well, you know. Something interesting about that, and this might catch some heat, but if you watch the replay, that was a Milan penalty. That was a Milan penalty. Carboni pushes Teo off the ball, and then they end up colliding. That, yeah.
I said during the thing, because I thought they called off the foul on us. I didn't realize that there was a collision. I thought they called a foul. And then they showed the replay. I was like, that's a fucking penalty. What are you talking about? Then I saw him hurt, and I was like, all right, whatever. So I got over it again in hindsight. You know, maybe it's a little protest would have been nice, but.
I'm sorry that you guys collided. However, you have also just pushed our player to the ground when he was nowhere near the ball. I'm surprised.
The thought process is, if he didn't shove Teo to the ground, that would have been Teo getting concussed instead of
pushing him out of the way of a bullet. Yeah. And then from that, they score the opening goal. Chow absolutely murders Milan Juric outside the box. And then gets up.
Should have been a free kick. They should have called it there.
he played advantage, and rightly so, from a Monza perspective, because Chow did well then to recover the 8 yards to get goal side of, was it Motta? Was it Danny Motta?
I can't remember.
And then he then decides that I'm going to stick my leg in again, and he gets nowhere near the ball. I think it was Motta, because he wears 47 or something strange like that. And brought him to the ground, and you're looking at Florenzi, who was behind him, going, oh no. Like, you didn't need to do that. I'm goal side of him. Like, you can just chuck him.
He was double covered. You just got to stand there.
It's mad. And that's what I'm saying about physically, he's there to make the interventions. Mentally, he's not making the right decisions. Yeah, it was a snowball penalty. No arguments from me. Mike's now conceded 9 in a row from the spot. So we're getting towards below average.
Starting time. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, you can never point at a keeper from a penalty and say, it's your fault. You should have done better, because it was Chow's fault that the goal went in. However, someone has rightly pointed out that in that run of penalties conceded, Maignan is going down way too quickly. Like, he's going out, and it feels like he doesn't get near any of them, because he goes the opposite direction each time. Yeah, because he's committed so early to going one way that the player just has to place it. And he basically placed it down the middle of the goal, because he was already on the floor. So, don't know, Tony Roberts, goalkeeper coach. I don't know. I doubt you watched this.
Not quite as good as Dida was, huh?
Especially when he was coming 3 yards off his line to save them. and then second goal, I guess, eh?
First goal, let's not forget, scored by Pessina, former Milan player.
That would be a theme.
keep that theme in mind here for the late stages. And then after our, 10 minute of stoppage time, or I think it was 8 minutes because of the concussion, which really, I think, threw us off our game. I mean, we were in control the first half, first 30 minutes, but there's absolutely fuck all happening. It was a very boring game at that point.
Yeah.
And then the concussion, I don't know. I think it just got in everyone's head, or they slowed down on our end. And then they obviously were like, do it for him. And then they fucking fired back. I don't know what happened, but yeah. So then, Chow gets, I can't remember. There was a counter press and then he was coming down the right-hand side. And he did a step over, and I don't think Chow went down, but he definitely got spun. He was beat pretty bad.
Spun like then, a tumble dryer, in the words of Steph, as he repeated over and over again, and then clipped himself saying and sent to the chat.
I didn't watch that clip. No. I didn't watch the watch along. I didn't watch his clip because I said, let me guess, more self promotion.
Yeah, so just knew what it was going to be.
Yeah.
Bless him. Yeah, he stayed stood up, but he got nutmegged by Cole Parnie on the break. It was a good move by Cole Parnie, don't get me wrong, but you got a question, how the fuck does your right-sided centre-back end up over there, you know, in a left-back position? I don't understand what was going on there. It was a break. It was a transition. It was a bit naive from us because, we've gone a goal down, and I know you want to try get back into it with all the added time that there is and stuff, but, just make sure you definitely don't concede that second goal going into the break, because that makes things really difficult. And yet, we got caught in a 2v2 situation at the back, and it wasn't even that brilliantly executed. Cole Parnie passed it to Motta probably way too early. He had a lot of space to run into. And then Florenzi does well to check Motta inside. Chow comes back in for another intervention. Ball loose. That's one of them where he's just unlucky. If he makes that block, he's getting credit. He's well done, Chow, for getting, hustling the fuck back and making a decisive intervention. Instead, it's an own goal, to be honest. I don't know if it's been officially credited.
No, they gave it to Motta officially, but yeah.
It looked like it was going wide to me, to be honest. But yeah, it loops up and over. And again, Maignan don't get near it, but I think the deflection sort of wrong foots him a little bit. And yeah, we're 2-0 down at the break.
Yay.
Fun. And then Luka Jovic decides to be a cunt.
We have some debate, you and I, on this one.
And I'm going to surprise you because I've watched it over and over again, and I'm coming around to the idea that was bollocks. I think it was, by the letter of the law, still a red card. However, when the on-field decision had already been a yellow card, I think it had to be absolutely conclusive evidence that he touched him, basically, because otherwise it's just a swipe. And I think that the referee going over and being shown the one really incriminating slow motion replay of how it happened essentially was the VAR saying, I've made your decision for you. And that shouldn't be how it is. However, with the dynamics of what went on, and people will be right when they reply saying he was stupid for lashing out, because he did still lash out in a way. But they'd come together before. The referee had tried to calm things down and clearly had failed. Off the ball, Pablo Mari pushes Jovic, with the ref having his back turned, obviously as a provocation, as the ball's, going somewhere down the right side. And then Jovic, having felt the push, turns around and almost goes like that, as if he's going to shrug his arms off him, as you do, a bit of a delayed reaction. The problem is he does throw his arms out there, and they're near his face. Whether he touches him or not, only Pablo Mari will know. I'm inclined to say it was maybe a scrape, but I think that's a really big decision to overturn that to a red card. I'm still 60-40 in favour of you being stupid there, Luka. Just try and keep you cool. He's provoking you for a reason, because he wants a reaction, and you gave him one. You can be better than that. But I also think, soft as shit, man. That's the way the game's going.
Yeah. Yeah. So my thought is, like you said, they were just broken up earlier. We're down 2-0. People are a little hot, a little amped up on both sides because of the situation of the game. They just got split up by the referee. Now, when you watch it, Jovic is walking towards him, but he's looking behind him because he's watching the ball, watching the game, and he gets pushed in the chest, two-hand push. That should have been what got called initially, right? It should have been on Pablo Mari. But when you get pushed in the chest and you're not paying attention, you're looking this way, and all of a sudden you get hit, you're going back, your initial reaction is, whoa, like brace yourself, you know? I don't think he was making a swipe intentionally at his face. I don't think he was trying to hit him. I don't think he was lashing out. I think he got pushed. He naturally reacted. It was face level. It didn't connect, at least from the point of view I saw. It looked like it wasn't connecting at all. It looked like just the worst acting performance you've ever seen, and he got away with it from Pablo Mari going down, clutching his face. No contact. Now, a point you made prior was, you know, he's lashing out and there was no argument. He lost his head. To me, because he didn't argue it, shows he didn't lose his head. If he lost his head, he'd been throwing a fit, you know, screaming, blah, 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 like making a scene like we saw with Higuain when he got his red card against Juventus years ago. Even Giroud, when he got one for lashing out, he made a scene, you know. That consistently happens. He just kind of accepted it because when in the history of football has protesting your red card ever resulted in getting overturned?
Probably get a
I think he's just like, what the fuck, man? I didn't do anything. Yeah. So he walked out. That's the way I look. I actually think Jovic was innocent. Now, he's still dumb, you know, like,
it's tough to assess that.
Yeah. I think he's innocent in the emotional aspect, but obviously he did stick his hands towards his face. You can't do that.
I know this isn't how it works, right? But you think about the VAR process. Let's say that there is a VAR review for a penalty that's been given to a team, and then they look at a foul that's happened before that and decide that what led to the penalty doesn't matter anymore because actually it's a foul the other way. So the penalty's chalked off. Why in this instance can VAR not look at that and say, all right, stop it there. Pablo Mari's committed the first offence, a shove off the ball. What happens after that is almost... But it's not going to work that way for violent... Shove. Yeah, it's not going to work that way for violent conduct. I get that. But I'm just saying, like, can there not be a more... Because Pablo Mari shouldn't get away with that, you know?
I mean...
It was smart from him. He knows how to push his buttons and shit, but...
What's the whole, like, you know, playground stuff, you know, your parents would tell you, or at least mine did. I don't know if this is just an American thing, but, like, don't hit someone first.
Shoot them instead.
That's funny. I was always taught that, like, you don't start a fight, but if someone hits you, defend yourself. And that's essentially happened, right? Like, he was standing there, not even looking at the guy. It's unprovoked. He gets assaulted, you know, and then all he did was just stick his hands out like, whoa, don't hit, you know, and he gets in trouble. At the very least, if you're going to give him a red, you have to look back and say, this was provoked by Pablo Mari. He did it unprovoked. They're both guilty. Give them both the red if you have to do it, because the only violent conduct is not sticking your hands out and not touching someone. It's trying to shove someone to the ground when their back's or when their face is turned. That's actually violent. I don't give them, you know, whiplash or whatever, you know. So
shit, really. And then we rolled back anyway. Look, we were forced to make changes. I've forgotten what they were, so let me just read them. Oh, Liao, Pulisic and Reinders came on at halftime for Okafor, Chukwueze and Adli. We were all happy with those changes. You know, those are the three main creative players that we have, really. Then obviously Jovic with card. Giroud came on for Bennacer just after that red card because we needed to have a centre forward out there. And it took him 10 minutes to score. Cross from the right from Florenzi, flicked on by Pulisic. Nice instinctive finish with left foot from Giroud inside the far corner. Go get the ball. We're back in the game. Because what I will say is that Monza, with a lead and a man advantage, completely shit the bed. Really. Like, they never went for the kill. And maybe they thought, okay, this is exactly where we want it. We're finally going to get a win against a big team this season. I get that. But they invited pressure. You know, they really, really did encourage us to go for it.
But we didn't give them any. We weren't really, didn't really give them much,
no.
That's what was bothering me is
we went
Monza had no incentive to push forward at that point, right? 2-0 up. The fuck are you going to make an attack for? You're good. Just hang tight. And we never pressured them on the ball. They stayed in their half as much as they could. And then every time we pressured, you know, things changed a little bit. And Pulisic put in an Avengers-level Captain America performance with his wonder goal and a great assist header to Giroud, who, by the way, scored with his foot in open play for the first time in a very long time. Granted, it was still a volley. So
first time since the first game of the season, I think. When he, sorry, the Roma. Roma, was it Roma? No, it might have been the first game of the season. But yeah,
it's been a very long time. That's all I know. But he did that, and you're thinking, you know what? I'm going to show up in all black for this podcast, and it's going to be the funeral of my Giroud agenda because we can't stop this guy, and he saved the day. And then it didn't matter. You know, I really felt like, oh, Giroud hat trick incoming once he immediately scored that. Because also, you know, in the substitution thing, I believe you could only make three subs at once, right? That's the max in a thing. Mm-hmm. We all know Giroud was coming on next, regardless of the Jovic red card. Mm. Pioli was just waiting 10 minutes, you know, and Jovic couldn't survive 10 minutes. So that's why it had to change and take off Bennacer, which obviously hurt the game. You can't go in with one midfielder and expect this to work, you know, because then now you're pulling Loftus Cheek back and making him play in the double pivot, which is not where he's supposed to be. So that obviously impacted everything. We know how that went. But when Pulisic scored the wonder goal, 88th minute, you think, okay, we got a point. That sucks. We didn't jump Juve. But at least we didn't lose any ground in this because
unbeaten run keeps going and
unbeaten run keeps going. You know, all this stuff.
Death.
Yeah, we look at it as like 2 points dropped. Now it's 3 points dropped because again, Danny Maldini, another former Milan player, receives a pass offside. By the way, and they showed that replay. Even my commentator said, "Yeah, that confirms offside." They were very confused. Receives a ball offside, passes it in. They score. It's flagged off. They go to VAR. And they say it's good.
Have you seen the semi-auto replay?
Yeah.
It was virtually level. Yeah, like it's the sleeve rule taken to the millimeters, shall we say. I thought they'd given it because the runner across sort of blocked Maignan's view and he was way offside. But it showed he was nowhere near it, like he couldn't have affected his sight line or anything like that. But yeah, I didn't realize it was for the pass in the build-up. Warren Bondo, he was very heavily linked to Milan as well for like two windows in a row when he was, I guess, 16, 17 and playing in France. But yeah, he bit us in the ass. Lovely finish, though. I'll give him that. Composure at that time. So,
yeah. Big. And at that point, I think everyone just shut off and accepted it. And that's the only reason Colombo got a goal. I don't think he would have gotten that otherwise. He didn't celebrate. That was nice. You know, fuck you for scoring, but
like, first goal since like December, I think.
That's how it goes. That's how it goes. Yeah.
Maybe early in the
match. And Maignan again on all four was just poor. So
Yeah. I think if you take the penalty out of it, I think the deflection he doesn't really get near, which is a worry. Okay, if it just creeps in, fair dues. Third one, yeah, you could see exactly where he had to put that shot and didn't save it. We've become accustomed to him stopping those. And then, yeah, the fourth one, he gets beat at his near post again. Near post has become a real weakness for him. And that was how it was. It was dramatic. It was enraging. I think everybody was really fired up after the game. And I just couldn't bring myself to hyper-analyze what went on, to be honest. I think it was one of those games, and you get them every now and again. I think Fiorentina game in the Scudetto season when we lost 4-3 away, and afterwards you're like, holy shit, that was annoying. But, like, it was entertaining, and there was a bit of... Yeah, it is. From a Milan perspective, it's shit. It's a shit result. It's more drop points, conceded 4 goals, defensive record gets worse, it's a missed opportunity to go second. All those things add up to an overall angry reaction, but
yeah,
it's just one of them. Like, it was just a shit show, and it's hard to pick it apart.
So there, I went to a bar to watch it with the Milan Club DC, and this guy showed up who had never been to the club meetups before. His name was Gary, real nice guy, sat next to me. Obviously the game wasn't going our way. And after Colombo scored, he just got up and walked out. And no one saw him again. He didn't say goodbye. And I just turned, I was like, where'd Gary go? And the other dude is at the table was like, I think he's left. He just walked away.
He couldn't bring himself to watch another second.
He was done.
I struggled because I was watching the game with the missus, and when the fourth goal went in, she goes, that's not Colombo, is it? And I went, yeah, it is. And she just started laughing and then went to bed. Then I was left to do all the post-match shit. And I was like, fucking TV remotes on the floor. And it's like, no, this is not a good day, man. Not a good day. Tough,
Lots of flops.
Yeah. Yeah, afterwards as well, I think Palladino said something like that win was for Berlusconi, and I'm like, oh,
fuck up.
It's like, God, really?
There's one thing Berlusconi wanted, it was not to beat Milan.
Well, no, actually, the win for Berlusconi was the trophy that we proudly have, thanks to a penalty shootout win. Yeah, mad. Anyway, fuck it, tops and flops. Top, Pulisic came off the bench and gave us life, gave us hope.
Yeah, there's really no other option for that, right? It's got to be Christian, so big ups.
You seen the angle of his goal from behind the net? Oh, my God. I thought it deflected. Like, it seemed like
forever.
Correct line at some point, but... Oh, beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. Perfect curl, perfect power. Really hard to do that. Shit fullback in, I'll be honest. He stood off and gave him 3 yards for no reason. But, hey, we took it, and I thought that was a perfect perfect goal to get us a hard-earned point or maybe more. Wasn't to be the case. And the flop of the match, unfortunately has to be Malik Chow. And... I'm not going to say any more than that. I'm not going to hate on him. I think we need a bit of time. He needs a bit of time, to get back into match rhythm mentally more so than physically. But you can't deny it was a disaster. No, Jovic for me, actually, because you're going to pick Chow. So I'll go Jovic. Don't be a dickhead.
I wasn't going to pick Chow, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, I think we're really spoiled here. So, you know, Chow, I actually... Look, that was one of the worst games he's ever had in his career. But as you said, he probably shouldn't have been playing anyways. So I'm going to give him a bit of a break because he's rusty. Jovic obviously is a big shout, you know, getting a violent conduct red card is pretty bad. I think we all know that one. I think Okafor did fuck all. I think Chukwueze did fuck all. Both of them probably deserve a shout.
Adley, shit.
Yeah. Adley did bad too. Yeah, all three off at half, you know? But I think, and Teo Hernandez wearing the captain armband could not complete a fucking pass to save his life. So he looked terrible. But the guy I'm going to go with is one of my favorite players we've ever owned. I have multiple jerseys of his. I'm going to pick a guy who has played just about every single game this season, Mike Maignan. You can't let in 4 goals and not even try to save a single one of them. I mean, each goal he just watched, you know, they just went past him. That's not good, man. You can't be doing that for a guy that wants 8 mil a season as a goalkeeper, who wants to have more money than Liao and Donnarumma to do all that. He spent his first 3 seasons with us. Half of those seasons were injured each time. This season is his first fully fit season, and I think it's objectively his worst season as a Milan player. So, in this game, just epitomized all that. So I'm picking Maignan.
There's a stat, right? And it's hard to quantify goalkeepers, you know, if they're performing as they should be doing. Yeah, I'm just trying to find it again because it's something along the lines of the expected goals against versus the amount that he actually let in. And this season, I know it was in the -4.5 range after the Bologna game. And I believe it's got even worse. I think it's 4.9 now. So essentially, he's let in 5 more goals than he should have done. Now, we've become accustomed to really high-level goalkeeping, great shot stopping, and he's more than that. He's a leader. He's a good distributor of the ball and that kind of thing. But it all sort of boils down to your number one objective is keeping the ball out of the net, and he's letting way too many soft goals, especially in 2024.
In his defense, how many makeshift back lines has he had protecting him during 2024? You know, and I know what set you're talking about, and I can't remember the exact naming either, but I know his best ever season was like +9 or +8, and that was when he won Ligue 1. And then when he came to us, it was just slightly below that at like +7. And then it slowly creeped down each season, but this is by far the worst, and it's not a slight decline, it's glaringly obvious. So I don't know what's changed other than the goalkeeping coach. Hopefully we could resolve that soon.
Yeah, absolutely. We shall move on and quickly preview the Atalanta game. We owe them one. They've beaten us twice this season, in the away league game, 3-2, last minute winner Luis Muriel, who Muriel gone to Orlando City, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then in the cup, obviously, which was, I still think that's a bigger blow than is being made out. You know, that was a legitimate trophy target, and we let them beat us. They're in red hot form, Atalanta. They're in red hot form, and they're being led by a red hot CDK. We don't know much about how the lineup's going to be for this one, purely because we've got the Europa League game. We don't know if there's going to be rotation. But one thing I will say is, I think we have to field our strongest team for this. However you get to that scenario, if you're Pioli, we have to field our strongest team for this game. So that's what I'll say. How are you feeling about this one?
Oh, we're going to get destroyed. We're getting fucking packed here on this one.
Dick.
Look, I'm looking at the table right now. We're in third, they're in fourth. And it's only a 7-point gap. We don't want to make that four. You know, when we could have been talking about being in second place last week, now we're talking about potentially being two slip-ups away from being in fourth. Don't want that at all. So, yeah, we gotta really do the business here. At the very least, a draw is a must. You know, that is an absolute requirement for us at the moment, and I don't know if we're going to get it. I don't know if our stars are in good health. I don't know how we're going to look after the second leg of the Rennes game. I would rotate for that as well. I would not field our best 11 for the Rennes Stade Rennais game. I would make sure everyone's rested and healthy and risk losing a 3-0 lead against Stade Rennais to come into this game full power and ready to do the job.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, Milan have conceded 112 goals in 2024 or something like that. I don't have the exact number, but it's a
not
lot.
Not in 2024.
Yeah, it's a lot, though. It was slightly exaggerative, that. But Atalanta have scored 17 in their last five. They hammered Frosinone 5-0, Udinese 2-0. They beat Lazio 3-1. They were really good in that game. I watched that one. It was the kickoff before us. They beat Genoa 4-1, and most recently they beat Sassuolo 3-0. So they're coming into this absolutely full of confidence. Their next five games, five games are huge. They've got us, Inter, then Bologna at home, and obviously they're battling for a top four spot. Juventus away, Fiorentina at home. Fiorentina mm-hmm. in the chasing pack as well. And then they go to Naples. Obviously they're a bit of a wreck at the moment, but who knows what they could be like under this new guy. So this is a real season-defining stretch for them. They bullied the lower clubs, as they probably should have done, but this is a litmus test for them. And I am also feeling not confident at all. I just think they've got our number this season. We can't defend. They're scoring lots of goals. We can't just try and outscore them. This has to be a back-to-basics kind of attritional performance. Like sort of last season when we beat them 2-0 at home in that Kotche kit. That was a nice fourth kit. And that's it. We need to focus on defending well first and then hope that we have the quality at the other end. A draw is not a horrendous result, but as you say, if the 7-point gap becomes a 4-point gap, then I think we're in a bit of trouble. Also, Bologna could then make that gap to us lesser as well. And Atalanta have a game in hand. It's against Inter, but it could become a point to us. You know, that's how good a roll they've been on, and we've been in good form as well, so it's unforgiving. And all of a sudden that big gap that we thought we had isn't there so much anymore. Now it's looking like fifth is going to be enough to get to Champions League, so really it's an 11-point gap to Roma in sixth. But I don't like the idea of finishing below Bologna as well, so
no,
get your shit together.
The way I'm looking at it here is the last team to keep a clean sheet against us was Udinese on November 4th. It's been that long. And since the turn of this year, in 2024 in January, we've scored at least two goals in all but two games. One of those was the Napoli win, and the other was an Atalanta loss. So, it's a little cagey, but the good news is we're averaging like 2.56 goals a game or something like that. And I think we could continue that against Atalanta because they do play such an attack-heavy game. I think if we catch them on a break, you know, we could put one away, especially if our boys are back in form. But on the flip side of that, our lineup and our system and our players invite so much pressure, probably why Mignon's been so bad this season. Atalanta's in red-hot form, like you said. I would be shocked if there's not a lot of goals in this one. I think it might be similar to last week, except anticipated. You know, in fact, I'm going to go 3-2, and unfortunately, I'm going to go Atlanta.
Mm. Yeah, I think we lose this as well, to be honest. 2-1. For all the reasons mentioned, we're really struggling to keep goals out. The lineups are all over the place. And yeah, they're in good form. I just see CDK finally scoring against us, you know.
And the fucker will celebrate too.
Probably. Do another interview about how he looks better in black and blue or something like that. Fucking leave black and blue, mate. We have been on a good run, you know. Going 8 in a row without defeat is good. We had been scoring a lot of goals. There were positives to take from that, but I think it was all the underlying feeling across that entire span is, well, let's wait until we play a good team, you know. We beat Napoli 1-0. I'm not going to say they're a good team, obviously they're in crisis, but we beat them 1-0. So they were the first team to kind of put the shackles on us a little bit. Losses against Atalanta bookended a good run, you know, in the league domestically. So they've got our number a little bit. Then we lose to Monza, conceding 4, and it's like we could do without playing Atalanta on short rest, you know. They're gonna be well rested. They're gonna look to make it three wins out of three against us this season, and I think they're gonna get it. Unfortunately, hope to be proven wrong, because we do pull these performances out of nowhere sometimes, where it's like, what were we worried about? But I don't know, man. I don't know. As I've said to you, and as I've mentioned on here many times, I'm not actually that arsed about the league season anymore. Like, I think we're gonna finish top 5, which is enough. Going to be enough Champions League, but any semblance of games being massive just sort of faded away a while ago for me. I just want to press fast forward on this season, see how we do in Europa League, but I've lost a bit of enthusiasm for the league, to be honest, because it looks like it's going to be best case second, worst case fourth, something like that, and it's hard to get excited about that. But anyway, we're over an hour, so we're not going to do questions here. And I apologise to everybody who submitted questions, but what we'll do is we'll do a bit of a roundtable type thing on the bonus this week to make up for it and go through some of the questions there. And for those of you saying, I don't subscribe to the Substack, I can do it. Well, use your free trial if you want to see if your question gets answered, or subscribe. We'd be massively appreciative for that. Bit of a shameless plug, but that's the plan. We don't want... It just got to get to work. That's the commitment involved here. He's missed his lunch. But yeah, thank you everybody for watching. Hope you enjoyed the therapy session. And I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers.
Yep. Thanks for tuning in, guys. And I might be here next week. I might not. Who knows?
Yeah, this is it, man. That's a bit morbid.
I may have put in some messages to the chat after the fourth goal that were very indicative of things that.
I was ringing the Citizens Advice Bureau to see. You should go check on him and see if he's all right. Gary, check on Gary, man. Yeah, thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be back in a week's time.
Gol! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'ora all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio cuore!